Salut, eu sunt Cezar Gheorghe, ascultați podcastul Narativ. Astăzi la podcastul Narativ vorbim cu regizorul Pedro Costa.
I would like to start the conversation with you because it's your first retrospective in Romania. Mm-hmm. And last night at the masterclass, the discussion, you talked about this issue of trying to distance yourself as a filmmaker from the money aspect part of the filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And I'm asking you this because when I talk to filmmakers that are making their first film, they always say this to me, like, oh, I need that camera and I need that lens and, oh, those lights, and you know. And it seems to me now with YouTube and everything, it's people are getting obsessed with gears, with gear in general, with cameras. Yeah. And I was interested... in the move you made, starting with in Wanda's room, where you took a cheap camera, a small camera, and started working with that. But at the same time, I think the image that you created is not a poor image. Hmm. I mean, I see it, I see a lot of a very painterly quality there. So does this technical aspect part really matter when you start to make a film? Do you need those expensive tools, maybe?
Well, several things in your question. But the techniques, the technical side, it's very boring for everybody, for me or for the very commercial crews and filmmakers. It's the same. It's not very, very. You've heard this a lot of times. It's not very difficult to learn how to make a film. There's a famous story. Orson Welles always said 2 days or one day before he started Citizen Kane, he didn't know anything about film, so when he got there, he started doing his own lights himself because he thought that was what the director did, is put the lights and do the actors. So the photography director and all the crew were a bit amazed looking at this guy. And he said, but it's very simple, you just start doing this, working around this game of lights and shadows, and you learn it in one day. So that's not the problem. The problem is what you said, is that I would go a little bit more further away, which is there's very few directors, and young, that's my point, and I'm a bit worried. Very, very few young guys and girls coming out of film school or just starting a film, their first preoccupations and are the, not the techniques, but they want to be on that safe side. Image, the sound, etc. must be absolutely I wouldn't say perfect, but perfect in a sense, it's what they see coming from America. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's simply as simple as that. And they see the Scorsese and the David Lynch and the Nolan, and they want it to be a little bit like that. Because if it's not like that, it will be amateur and poor, etc. That's a problem that has to do with the mystification of and the domination of a certain cinema, a certain image, a certain way of doing. And it's very difficult to explain to this to these young people that that's what they should fight first: the power of money, the power of injustice, inequality. It has a lot to do with techniques. The best cameras are not affordable for a young guy. The best lenses are, I mean, just one lens, it's like 50,000 euros, yeah. One lens. So I think the idea would be to make the film, I mean, start something that this boy or this girl thinks it's interesting, that he really wants to make, and because he wants to express an idea or a point of view or talk about his family or the world or whatever. And that has to be the main force. That's a little bit what I did in when I started that in Wander's room, more or less alone. I had made some films that were a little bit conventional for my feeling, conventional, and especially they brought a lot of injustice. I mean, I saw from my chair of director that things were not quite right. I saw a lot of problems between the people in the crew, between actors, between, you know, in cinema, every problem, every solution has to do with money. If there's a problem, we pay. If there's some kind of trouble with someone, you just shut him up, paying a bit more or promising things. So it's unfair, and cinema is a mirror. For me, it has always been a mirror, like this one, of the worst things in our capitalistic society, our market society, the one that functions on buying and selling and proposing a little bit fake things. So the question of doing, if it's good photography or art or good literature or music, it's not important in the beginning, I think. It's really what drives you, what kind of feelings drive you. If you propose something that contains a little bit of decency, a little bit of, you know,
maybe honesty is the word.
I don't know, honesty, because you never know if you're being honest or not, or sincere. It's a might be a tricky, but decency, like I'm not here to cheat, or I'm not here to, I'm searching for a certain truth in myself and the things I try to do, the images. We'll try to do some images that, in a way, make justice to myself and to the others, you know. This is a kind of, this is my mirror of society. And I feel it's more complete and more real than all the others. And this will come with a certain, you said, pictorial qualities. I would say it will come with a certain decency.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not sure if Rembrandt or Cézanne, or if they thought, I'm going to do a masterpiece, or I'm going to do very... They started painting, and and the practice and their own selves expressed that way, because they...
But speaking of decency, let's say, is this the reason that you have such a big commitment in time when you work at a film? So for you seem to work a lot, and you seem to be very committed to that person, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. either is Ventura or mm-hmm. Wanda Duarte or Vitalina Varela.
Yeah, for me it has to be, because it's always a very serious, not problem, but a very serious situation when you, I take it seriously. I mean, I'm going to make a film with someone that we're not very close yet. We can become close working, and I will discover things, and as he will discover from me. So it's a relation. It's about a relation more than anything else, human relation, an experience. So that has to be, again, decent. It has to be something that, I mean, we should enjoy, and we should not profit from one another, or not cheating, not doing harm, etc., etc. And we are working in something that we like. Mm-hmm. So, but it's a serious matter. Every time I put my camera in front of Ventura or Vitalina, I feel that, I mean, I don't know. Like I always have the feeling that this is the first time anyone puts a camera in front of this person. And so it's a new problem completely. I have to solve it. And then I think, I can solve it with him. So tell me, how do you want this to happen? And what are we going to do, really? Talk about or not talk about?
You ask them, how would they like to go about
it? I ask them, and sometimes, yeah. All the dialogues, for instance, are 90% there. Mm-hmm. What they say, it's a very oral work. We don't write, so we repeat. We mm-hmm. repeat, and by repetition, like in theater,
yeah.
The text is in your head suddenly.
Yeah,
but that text was already inside of you. It's you. It's your mm-hmm. story. So it comes out and goes in again, mm-hmm. and it's transformed. But it's a conversation. It's a conversation. Sometimes it can be a silent. I would even say that sometimes the best or the most interesting or strong moments in some films are the things that are not answered, you know, the mm-hmm. mysteries. Because I ask Vitalina something, and I feel she doesn't want to go there. Mm-hmm. And just that silence, or that just knowing that, it's also work. We can work around that unknown place. And that sometimes produces very good scenes or mm-hmm. things.
So I have a question about...
But it's very close to theater, more than... it's very close.
I have a question about memory. So, for instance, in the film Horse Money, mm-hmm. there is this scene when Ventura is getting into the elevator, I think, and mm-hmm. We see that ghost, that memory from mm-hmm. his past, the soldier, mm-hmm. which is something that happened to him mm-hmm. In Cape Verde, mm-hmm. Back home, mm-hmm. let's say. But at the same time, the films, the way the film is structured does not, tell you, okay, we're going to back to a flashback or to a memory. Mm-hmm. So it seems to be very continuous. We go into his mm-hmm. past as if it's something very natural, as you were walking into another room. Yeah.
I wouldn't say easy, because it's always very a lot of work to do that, to think that, and we really, like you say, we work a lot. I work a lot. He, the crew. It's difficult to think about, and and produce. But what you're saying is something that came naturally almost, because Ventura still thinks a little bit like that. For him, the past, the present, the future, not really, because the future is something that for this community is a bit, it's dark, you know, mm-hmm. it's not like for you, I hope, or for me. We have, I wouldn't say dreams, but we have something. It's kind of a projection, mm-hmm. tomorrow, next yeah. month, something.
We make plans.
Vacations, yeah. a new thing, etc. It's very rare that these people have this idea of a brighter tomorrow, let's say. But the present and the past, they are two trains that are always...
They even say we will still suffer tomorrow, we will still have a hard life in the beginning of horse money.
It's always stepping in to the past and in the present, and it makes no difference. He really, it's like those people in the circus that have the balls, and he has two balls in his hand, and one is the past, one is the present, and he managed to arrange that very well. And I also think if you do your job well, you can do it in film, mm-hmm. or in novel. Of course, there's lots of more in writing. I mean, in that sense, cinema is really very, very conservative, because if you think of James Joyce or mm-hmm. or Samuel Beckett or William Faulkner has a book that a lot of filmmakers have thought of and failed to adapt, called Wild Palms, that mm-hmm. are two stories. One chapter is one story, the other, and they never touch, but it's fantastic. It's a bit like that. I mean, you are in the past, in the present, but things get very entwined and mingled, and there's a confusion. And that confusion was the state of confusion of Ventura at that mm-hmm. moment. He lost his mind almost. He lost himself. So when you lose your mind, you lose a bit the sense of time. Mm-hmm. So, and cinema can do that a little bit, can play with that. There's a lot of examples in films.
Speaking of this question of time, how do you decide how long a shot will be? Or do you decide? Is it something which is decided by the shooting itself?
It depends, of course, on if you have a text, like in Vitalina, there's some shots that are monologues. Mm-hmm. She has to say something. Sometimes very long, very difficult. We start from a first essay, and then we do 2, 3, 4 dozens of takes. She concentrates, improves. I tell her that's too big, or that's... There's a work that we do during days sometimes. Mm-hmm. And then it's a matter, it's always it's a kind of the tension, almost nervous tension. It's very, you can feel it very, in the shooting, in the place when we are shooting, you can feel it almost physically, because these people are not actors, professionals or professional art can, mm-hmm. on, off, and they can't. I mean, the tension that goes inside of each take is very strong. And so you can feel when things are not there anymore, when, you know, it's very obvious, because they are telling their own stories. So. Mm-hmm. and they are very interested in telling them well and showing how things were for them. So when it's not happening, you feel it immediately. The tension is not there.
So yesterday you spoke about the fact that you don't really like the word documentary and that you really have to organize reality. Yes, cinema is seeing reality, but this reality has to be organized.
No, it's like you were saying for this horseman, the things that happened to Ventura really happened to him, that we tried to show in this film, like with this ghost, this imaginary ghost that happened to him. In the past, we try to, it's something true, I mean, it's not invented. At the same time, it could have been written by a writer. There's some poetry there, there's some art even. But it's true, it's we're documenting a piece of Ventura's early life.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we have to organize that tale that he's telling us. He told me once I was in an elevator with a man and he wanted to kill me. And we asked, what man, what shape, what form? So you have to organize this. You give shape and form to your, to your, not only to this soldier, but to your shots, to the scene. Some are long, some are short. And that's an order. That's an order of that is part, comes part from documentary, because Ventura is always there speaking his truth, and part fiction, because I mean it's an elevator that doesn't exist. This ghost finally has a form that probably was not the form that Ventura had imagined. I don't know. So there's a part of imagination that comes, and as always, things are organized.
For instance, with the film Vitalina Varela, you have this beginning of this like long procession through a narrow street, and I was interested. There are some pictures, some frames of your films, and a lot of them, either from Colossal Youth or Horseman, or especially Vitalina Varela, they are. Some of them are really dark, and this is very like almost Dutch masters type of aesthetics. So we usually have a beam of light penetrating all that darkness. Mm-hmm. Is this a result of working in that place, or
it's a coincidence, because I don't know if it's my taste also in my formation, my what I like more or my in cinema or in painting or photography. I think I work. But that I discovered with Wanda in Wanda's room. I prefer to work in closed spaces. And I don't know how to be in the landscapes.
How much lighting do you use? How much artificial lighting do you use? Do you ever use it?
Yeah. At night it's difficult. I mean, we have to have something. But in Wanda's room was the lamps in the room. Then if it's outside, you need something else. But so that's a special night. We have to get some lights and maybe some guys to help us, electricians. But that's just sometimes. It's a coincidence, because, as I said yesterday, that it's a fact that the Dutch painters, what they did was painting. Suddenly people saw natural light. I mean, Vermeer, when you see the light come from the window, so people are close to the window, and they are they are illuminated in a certain way, natural way. The spaces, it's true, are always very contained. There's a sort of solitude and isolation and melancholy in that those painters. But at the same time, there are lots of painters, Dutch landscape painters, where they showed, it's very documentary. You see the life in the country, you see the life in the city, you see. So that's, when I'm there in that place, or the light travels the same way as in the Dutch painting, because it's architecture. It's the way they built the houses.
So what is your approach to framing then? Because I see a lot of shots when either Ventura or maybe the ones with Ventura more, where he's actually facing the frame and it's like unusually framed. It's not like the usual, what they usually teach in film schools. Oh, you had to have the two-third rule and all that. Yeah. And some of them look like they are claustrophobic sometimes, or maybe there's a certain relationship you are conveying with the space. How do you approach framing?
That's a difficult question. I try to be now very, or more and more, more intuitive, more have a certain intuition to. I know that part of my, of that action has to do with all the things that I've seen and loved. Of course, everybody's like that. I mean, you are, you have a lot of, like somebody said, you have a lot of giants on your shoulders, painters, photographers, filmmakers, etc. So that's not avoidable. But for each situation, for each shot or sequence, it's also a lot of work. As it's the same work as we do with the actor, with the text. So I might begin with just the camera. I'm not going to say just there, just by chance, but in front of the actor. And then while we repeat the text, things happen. Vitalina might look up. She doesn't know why. I don't know why. There's something nervous. She talks about her son and her eyes go immediately up to the ceiling, maybe to the sky. So I want to see the eyes and I can't see them like this. So I move a little bit. And then my friend says, if we put the light here, the eyes are much better. So perhaps we go up a little bit. So it's again, I wouldn't say a boxing game, but it's an approach to between the text and the feeling. And it has a lot to do with people, because I told yesterday, it's rare that I do a shot without someone. That the frame depends on who's inside and how many, etc. It's very rare that I do a frame or a shot of an object or a landscape. They exist, but because I cannot solve the problem otherwise. But if I could, there would be always people in my, because I feel like if I put my camera here and I shoot, a landscape, or I feel immediately an imposter.
It's like that.
It's very easy.
Like Antonioni said, if you film the part where there are no humans, even if on the other, if it's paradise, it will still be more interesting. If you film the part where the people are.
Yeah. No, he said very, very strong things. He also said a wall, just a wall, can be spectacular. And it's true. But for me, I feel one of the problems of contemporary cinema is when it gives up the human part, the human side, when it becomes too painterly, too landscape, too. There are great things done, good work, but sometimes it's too easy. For me, it's very difficult to understand or to feel myself comfortable and know my camera position in front of the sea or in a jungle. The space and time becomes very complex for me. I need another kind of relation. I'm not a sailor, I'm not a seaman, I don't live in the jungle, so I don't know the rhythms, I don't know. And for me, when we frame, it's a piece of time. You know, it will cut there, somewhere, and it will start somewhere too. So it's a piece of time. It's a space, first, that can become, that will become a piece of time. And it should be the most interesting thing that you can do at that moment. So I feel safer. I don't know. I think it's much more difficult, but I don't want to be. It's very difficult when you have people in your frame. When you don't, you know, time becomes a bit vague. It's breathing. I mean, where to start and where to cut. It could be longer or shorter. If you have someone doing something, saying something, it's easier to begin than to stop. And that's the classicism in cinema. I mean, it depended on human movement, on human feeling. You knew you had to cut there because the action was over or something was over. Now, Antonioni is one of the, or maybe the one that broke everything. He extended time.
Yeah.
People got out of the room and the camera stayed. It's very strange. So the absence of people in his films is very interesting. He's very interesting because of the absence of people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just criticizing another kind of type of very, very artistic films that exist far more.
Do you still operate the camera yourself?
Yeah, most of the times.
Of the times. Would you ever go back to a more classical way? So the way you shot Bones, maybe, or do you ever feel the need to go back to a more, a bigger crew or something?
I'm the more classical filmmaker you can find.
You know what I mean, like the big crew and the...
Sense. But that's conventional, that's not classic.
Conventional, that's the word.
No.
But is this a question of actually...
It's concentration.
Trusting concentration,
it's concentration. To do, it's like if you ask me, because I think I work in the form of music, in the chamber music.
Mm-hmm.
It's not symphonic. I know I can be lost in the symphonic music thing, you know. 100 musicians, or we are 4, and it's already difficult.
Okay.
Because it depends a lot on the dialogue, the things we do, on the conversation. And if you're 3, it's okay. 4, it's okay. 5, the problems begin.
So last questions, because you are needed somewhere else. This short film, which I understand is an excerpt from a larger, is going to be a feature film. Why did you decide to have the 3 screens?
Because it was just, I was doing tests. Each shot was shot different in a different day and different actors, and it was supposed to be a test to for the singer and for mm-hmm. us. And then today with digital, it's very simple to put one together. So, and one day we saw the three of them mm-hmm. like that. And we thought, oh, because of the music, because there was a, like a question and answer. One says something and the other answers. It's
so this The Daughters of Fire will be finished? Or
next year, I'm not sure, but yeah, we'll be shooting next year.
Ați ascultat podcastul Narativ. Eu sunt Cezar Gheorghe. Ne auzim săptămâna viitoare.